our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
The PRP injections are turning into, you know, the modern-day version and baseball version of snake oil salesmen.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
They'll do anything, and people are like, well, you try this, we're going to take your blood out, we're going to mix it around with something, and then throw it back into you and see if it works, you know?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, then you think, okay, you pitched 34 innings. What if you'd have just gone under the knife at that point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're 12 months now recovered. You know, maybe you could come back in the second half.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 252 of the Friends Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst and writer for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is none of our usual gang. Mike and Matt both had to bail, unfortunately, and then my backup plan had to bail. So it's just me and the guests, and that's Joseph, and I'm going to butcher his last name once again, Pitaleski of Baseball HQ. Joe, how you doing?
You got it. I'm great, man. Good to be here, and much better than last time. It was not a butcher job.
Wow, it's, you know, every once in a while I learn. It's just a matter of whether I can remember it later on.
Good thing all your college education is paying off.
Yeah, right. Thank God.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe, for those who might not know who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Baseball HQ, any other writing that you do. And then where people can reach you on social media.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at ShoelessJoeHQ, and that's where I'm hanging out this year, this season, just at Baseball HQ. I'm going to be writing their Market Pulse column every Sunday, so that's going to be teaching both shallow league owners and deep league owners how to use their free agent dollars, going to be monitoring ad drops in all sorts of leagues and kind of show you when and where and how to use your free agent bucks and your waiver stuff. So that's kind of what I'll be doing. And of course, I'll be on social media from time to time. And so that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Well, definitely check Joe out over there at Baseball HQ. And definitely give him a follow because he's one of those guys that does not have enough followers. And is super active on Twitter. Like, you're involved, like, anytime I'm on there, you're involved with the conversation with, you know, two or three guys within the industry. So definitely go and give him a follow, and ask him questions because he'll be one of those guys that actually responds.
Cool, man. Thanks. Appreciate that. I would do. Try my best.
let's jump into, kind of our first topic of the day. And that is, we're going to discuss some kind of some players that started off hot, some players that have started off cold. And we'll start with Nomar Mazara, which who has started off pretty hot, to say the least. He is currently hitting 417, 462, 750 to start the day. Two home runs, 9 RBIs. Obviously, he's not going to keep this kind of pace up. But is this indicative of what we thought we would get from him this year? Because I know a lot of people worried, especially about platoon splits.
Yeah, you know, as I was looking through, because I watch a lot of Rangers stuff, obviously, down here in Dallas-Fort Worth area. So Nomar's, you know, he's the next great thing here. I think, you know, we haven't yet, the verdict is still out on can he hit lefties. You know, the sample size is still, you know, it's not super small, but there's nothing yet that shows us he's gotten over that. But, you know, let's not forget this guy's 21 years old. You know, he comes into the league last year as, I think, the youngest guy in the league and really has a first half of the ages. You know, his second half was, you know, not great. But, you know, I think obviously you're going to get power with him. He's still a work in progress, though. I mean, even now, you know, I was looking a little bit deeper. He's got a 5-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. You know, his BABIP is super high, and I watched him the other night against Cleveland. He hit just this meatball up in the zone against Salazar and hit it almost as far as Gallo hit his, like, the night before that. Like, huge upper deck shot. So there's no doubt about his power. But, you know, he's got a less than 4% walk rate right now. It wasn't great last year. But, you know, he's incrementally, he's going to get better. I mean, it's a couple, he's a couple adjustments away from really being a star, in my opinion. I mean, if he can creep his walk rate back up to league average, you know, 10% or so, get that strikeout rate a little bit below where he's been. I think his career is like 19%. If he can get that down to like 17%, I mean, he can hit for average. He can hit for power. He chips in a few stolen bases. So, I mean, the future's bright for this guy.
I agree. And, I mean, I was a big fan of his last year. I mean, I think, you know, the big worry with him is that he will get platooned because he has yet to show the ability to hit against left-handers. I mean, he's only had three plate appearances versus a lefty this year, no hits. So, I mean, obviously way too small of a sample. And like you said, last year was too small of a sample to really draw massive conclusions from him. But they seem to, you know, not want to stop giving Ryan Rua playing time. They have Delano DeShields, who they seem to be interested in getting playing time. They both match up perfectly as the other side of the platoon for him. So that is a little bit concerning. I think considering his price wasn't exorbitant this offseason in terms of your draft cost. So I think, you know, you hold on to him. I wouldn't try going and selling or buying either way, because obviously he's not going, like I said before, he's not going to keep up this pace. But I don't see why there isn't any reason for him to put up, I don't know, a Jock Peterson-esque kind of year, even if he does lose some at-bats and plate appearances to lefties. I mean, he's a guy who could hit 20 to 25 home runs with a decent average, 270, 275, something like that. And he's going to hit, you know, more than likely, you know, in the middle of a pretty good lineup in Texas. I mean, Texas has got a pretty solid lineup, so you got to imagine the counting stats around him. I'd love to see him steal a couple bags, but I just don't know. You know, he hasn't stolen a single base since Double A in 2015, so that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I don't see him as a big steals guy per se. I mean, he's long, he's lanky, I think Jock Peterson is a comparable guy, not as far as skill set necessarily, guy that struggles with the lefties and a guy that's, you know, hits in a nice lineup. You know, Globe Life at Arlington is probably one of the better parks for left-handed hitters. And, you know, one thing you're going to have to think about, and I heard this on the local broadcast the other night, is that Bannister still wants to give Chu playing time in the field for whatever reason. It's a terrible idea, but they're talking about keeping him, you know, in the game defensively as far as, you know, not just wanting to DH him full time. So you got to look out for that. That was something that was kind of I hadn't heard this year. I think it's a stupid idea, but that's something to keep an eye on going down the stretch. But as long as he's hitting, you know, I think he's going to be in there. Good chance that he gets bumped down in the lineup at some point as well when Beltre comes back. So another thing to consider with him. But, you know, again, the guy's young. I think he's going to be a budding star. It all kind of depends on, can he round that game into form against lefties? So
I wonder if the idea of playing Chu in the outfield is a way of getting Joey Gallo more at bats once Beltre comes back, because you're going to need to, especially with, you know, obviously again, super small sample, but Gallo's been pretty decent. You know, especially in terms of the power, obviously, in this small kind of sample of the beginning of the season, if he continues to be hot, you don't want to take his bat out of the lineup, and you don't really want him playing left field.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see where Gallo gets playing time once Beltre comes back, honestly.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you move Chu out to left, then you can put Gallo at DH. I'm wondering if that's the impetus of that talk.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. I mean, Chu's typically been in right field, and now what do you do with Rua? What do you do with Profar? What do you do with Delino DeShields? You know, they've got a lot of options there, and my guess is that Gallo goes back down and continues to work on his 39% strikeout rate and gets regular at-bats is my guess. and they'll keep cycling Mazzara, Chu, and other people in right field, DH, things like that, and just kind of keep that lineup rotating. So unfortunately, that's you know, good for the organization, bad for your fantasy lineup.
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, why is Profar still up? Especially, I mean, why wouldn't Profar be the guy to be sent down? I mean, he's still got an option left. He looks pitiful at the plate right now.
Yeah, I have a feeling that whoever gets hot out of the three, DeShields, Profar, Ruah, and Ruah kind of has a leg up because he can play first base and backs up and platoons with Napoli. So I think he's safe. I think whoever gets hot between those two bats is going to be the one that's up.
Okay. Let's move on to a guy that I've loved for a very long time. I was a little bit more timid on him this offseason because obviously the injury issues, but Garrett Richards has been placed on the 10-day DL. When I wrote these notes, he hadn't yet. He had just been removed from a game because of a bicep cramp, is what they're calling it. You know, obviously the skills aren't the question. The question is health. How comfortable are you with Garrett Richards rest of the way?
Man, I'm not super comfortable. And what it feels like is, okay, he was really a TJ, a Tommy John guy last year who decided that he was going to do the platelet injections and rest. And so it's like, you kind of ask yourself, like, why don't you just do it, man? You know, just get it out of the way, because now it's like I have a bicep problem. And you know, all those muscles are attached right at that same elbow ligament.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some nerve damage last year. And you just, it feels like, you know, overcompensating, and now another part of the arm's hurting. And from what I've read, you know, the two aren't related. They think it's just a little deal, but you just can't help thinking that this is not a guy that you want to leverage on your roster for the rest of the season. You know, I hope you have a backup plan, in other words. And yeah, along with that, I mean, this is the Angels guy. I mean, they need him to be pitching. And if he's not, that's a blow to the team.
It's a huge blow to the team because I mean I'm a fan of Tyler Skaggs, but you can't have Tyler Skaggs and Nat Shoemaker leading your rotation.
No.
So I mean, just from a team and a real baseball perspective, that's pretty scary. So
yeah.
I understand why guys do this. I mean, I totally get why guys attempt to go without the Tommy John surgery, do the rest rehab, the PRP injections. I just feel like at this point, the PRP injections are turning into, you know, the modern day version and baseball version of snake oil salesmen.
Right.
It's like, you know, it just, they'll do anything. And people are like, well, you try this, we're going to take your blood out, we're going to mix it around with something and then throw it back into you and see if it works, you know?
Right.
It seems kind of ridiculous to me.
Well, then you think, okay, you pitched 34 innings. What if you'd have just gone under the knife at that point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're 12 months now recovered. You know, maybe you could come back in the second half and actually produce a little bit, you know, but either way, I feel like that's what it's going to be with Richards all year is, you know, maybe a little bit and then back on the DL and maybe a little bit back. And then at some point it's like, yeah, I'm just going to go get the Tommy John.
Yeah. Let's say, I mean, you know, I think most people are going to try to hold him and see if he can come back, deliver some good starts before attempting to maybe sell him. Here's the thing. You're never going to be able to sell him for what you bought on draft day. You know, he could put together five straight fantastic starts, and nobody's going to buy him for full market price because of the injury in the past. So are you willing to sell him low? And if so, what would you sell him for?
Ooh, man. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, what did he go for this year? I mean, what were people paying for him? I was out. I didn't have any shares of him. I've got him at 235 around an NFBC ADP. So
he was going as the 66th starting pitcher off the board on ESPN.
Right. So
in the Trevor Bauer, Drew Pomeranz, Irvin Santana, Carlos Rodon area.
Yeah. I mean, Are we talking redraft, obviously?
Obviously redraft. I mean, even if you want to talk dynasty or keeper, I mean, you've got to bake in if you buy him in one of those leagues, and that's where I have most of my shares because I was huge on him last year before the injury. He has probably less value in those formats because you have to suspect he's going to get Tommy John at some point.
Right.
You don't know how long you're going to miss out of the future. Well, let me throw some names at you and tell me, would you rather have Richards or this guy? So, I'm going to start about 10 spots below where he was drafted.
Yeah, that's where I'm looking to.
Where would you rather have Richards or Eduardo Rodriguez?
Probably Rodriguez, honestly. I mean, at least he's on a good team that could get you some wins.
Okay. Richards or Brandon Finnegan, who had an amazing first start and then got shellacked a little bit in a second.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about him later. So, I probably still have Richards.
Okay. Richards or Alex Cobb?
Oh, I like Alex Cobb. Definitely Alex Cobb.
Yeah, see, I'm going Richards there. I am not a believer in Alex Cobb in the least. Richards or Lance Lynn?
I like Lance Lynn. I would take Lynn.
I've not been a Lynn guy, but I think I would take Lynn as well.
Yeah.
Last one, Richards or Blake Snell?
I like Blake Snell. I just don't like Blake Snell this year. So that's a pick'em for me, honestly, because he pitches in a good park and he's got a great defense behind him. So not skill-based, but based on what's around him right now, I might take Snell.
I think I'd rather just stick with the upside of Richards. In a dynasty keeper, obviously I'm taking Snell, but I think in a redraft, I don't see Tampa Bay being very good, so the wins are probably not going to be there. I think the innings he does give aren't going to be of great quality. I think you'll get strikeouts, and that's about it.
Yeah, and I think
you can find those guys on the waiver wire.
And honestly, Snell is around there just based on name value and pedigree right now.
I completely agree.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm hedging, but I would probably go Richards now that you've convinced me. But I mean, what about this guy? What about Ivanova? Would you take Ivanova over him?
I think you have to. National League, really nice park. I know the health is a concern as well, but
I do too.
I think you're more likely to get 140 to 150 innings at an over than you are Garrett Richards at this point. And I love Garrett Richards. I mean, he was my pick for AL Cy Young last year. I went out on a limb and was and got murdered in a number of leagues because of it. In the Barf League, I think he was my number two pitcher.
Okay.
I'm huge on the skill set. I love the skill set. But I think at the end of the day, this news is a little bit too scary for me. I'm not dropping him, but if I could get, 75 cents on the dollar, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, no doubt. I hear you.
Let's go ahead and move on to someone you've been kind of huge on this year, and he's starting hot, making you look extremely smart. Three home runs already for Brandon Belt and a stolen base. The average isn't great, but he's a dude who walks all the time. He's got a 378 OBP already this season. What are your thoughts on Brandon Belt?
Yeah, I mean, this has kind of been the running joke with Mike and I, as in the off season, because we did our wager of who's going to have more value at the end of the year. Is it going to be Eric Hosmer or Brandon Belt? And I was without question, I was a Brandon Belt fan and remain a Brandon Belt fan. So I think this is a guy that's been in the league 6 years now, and he's 28. He's held his own since 22. I'm not going to say he was a great player, but he's one of those guys that you can actually look at his development in a linear path and say, this guy's pretty much outside of injuries has grown every year. And for me, this seems like this is a guy that's going to put it together. So, if you're in an OBP league, this is a guy that I waited on because, in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits listener league, or I think it was listener league, is that what we're calling it? The staff league. first baseman just was a crazy run with between the first and second rounds. By the time the turn came for me at the end of the second round, there was nobody left, and I certainly wasn't taking Jose Abreu at the end of the second round. So I waited and got Belt way later, and you know, so far great. Tons of walks. His strikeout rate's a little bit higher than career normal, but his walk rate is right in line. He's hitting for power. He hit two at Petco the other day. So it's not all smoke and mirrors. He hit the other one off, I think, Taiwan Walker. So I think, I mean, if he develops a little bit more power, I know AT&T isn't good for that, but I still see that he's going to have a year or two of 25 to 30 home runs. And between that, and the walk rate and the OBP, I think he's going to return some great value for where he's been drafted.
I'm wondering if that Jose Abreu comment was a dig, because I took him later that makes around. So, but I also backed him up with Josh Bell, who's, you know, a little bit of a, I think, underrated guy, especially in OBP formats. But I mean, in terms of Bell, I've been a huge attractor of him for a long time. I get to watch him virtually every day. I mean, I watch probably about 150 Giants games a year. So I could see quite a bit of Brandon Belt. And I just don't think he's ever going to be the guy that hits for 25-plus home runs unless he just starts pulling and swinging for the fences. And that, I think that'll come at a real a detriment to his average. Now, in OBP formats, like you said, he walks so much of the time. I mean, last season, walked almost 16% of the time. His career average is right around 11%. But I think you could probably plug him in for about, I don't know, 12 to 13% walk rate. That helps kind of supplement the mediocre averages we've seen from him in the past. And if it were to take a dip, because he is selling out for power, it would supplement there. So I think in OBP, he is a guy that is usable and fine. Not just usable. I think he's a fine first baseman. I think in average leagues is where I start having a problem, because he's not going to ever hit for Chris Carter type power, because he's just not that guy.
Right.
Could he hit for 25 to 27 home runs? Yes, I believe that. But I think it would come at a 230, 240 average. And then how sexy is that? Because as much as I love my Giants, it's not the best lineup in the world. I mean, they get to the playoffs typically from, you know, a little bit of magic in their pitching rotation. And so, you know, he's not going to be a guy who gets you 90 runs, 90 RBIs. I think Brandon Crawford led the Giants last year in RBIs with like 85 or 86. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, the counting numbers in itself aren't going to be there. The speed totally disappeared last year. He's already got one stolen base this year, so that's a little bit encouraging. And I think the Giants as a team may try to steal a little bit more than they did last year. But a guy who gets 23 home runs with, you know, 3 to 4 stolen bases and a 255 average isn't that sexy to me. Like I said, in the OBP format, I'm totally fine with it. And I think he gets a nice little boost there. He's one of those guys that does. But in your standard 5x5, I want better options. And if people are buying in right now on the power, I'm totally down to sell.
Yeah, I mean, I totally trust your judgment. Watching him all the time, you know, I will say, even at this early stage, 235 BABIP bodes well for bringing that average back up. But I do think, you know, he's, unless he figures out, you know, and at 28, do you figure this out, you know, some of your mechanics or your swing or, you know, figuring out where those holes are to be able to get that average up to the 270, 280 range, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, probably not, but if he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, it's going to be in the next, you know, 2 years, I would imagine. And if, you know, like you said, he's going to have to shore up some of the holes in his game if he's going to be a guy that's not, is going to be more useful to you outside of an OBP format. But yeah, you know, for what he is, I think it could come, but it better come quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I think he is I don't know. I look at if he's going to start selling out for Powers, go look at his 2014 numbers before getting hurt and see the 243 average, you know, with a 288 BABIP, you know, 12 home runs, which was great in 235 plate appearances, but it's going to come at a cost. So if he starts to sell out for power, and he may, you know, he may decide to do that, I think it's going to come at a cost. Plus, obviously Buster Posey was hurt earlier in today's game. He was hit in the head with a pitch from Taijuan Walker. Yep. So who knows if he's going to go on the DL, have to miss some time. The Giants have talked quite a bit about this offseason about getting Buster Posey out from behind the dish. Uh-huh. And that will come at a cost to Brandon Belt. So that's just something to be mindful of. You know, maybe if Posey is injured, has to go on the 7-day DL for concussions, you know, maybe there's a little bit of reprieve. But I want to see a month of playing time and see how many games Belt is being sat in favor of moving Posey over to first.
Yeah. You know, here's a nice part. So since 2014, his K rate's dropped 3 years in a row. His walk rate's jumped 3 years in a row. And he's been pretty consistently in the 200 isolated power range, which, no, that's not coming with home runs, but obviously he's getting his share of doubles, you know. So he's not going to kill you even in more of a power league like, you know, an OPS format, even if he's not hitting the home runs. But like you said, the lineup is going to be a detriment to that. The park's going to be a detriment to that. So part of it's just, you know, you wonder if the guy was in Cincinnati.
I was just about to say that. I think if he was in a park like Arlington or Great America Ballpark or out in Milwaukee or something like that, we'd be talking about a guy who was a real legitimate 25 to 30 home run threat without having to take the huge dip in average. But I mean, he in AT&T, I mean, he's just a guy that ends up getting, you know, a few more doubles that should be home runs at other parks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move over to a guy, you know, Mike, you know, notoriously down on Brandon Belt, notoriously high on Gregory Bird, who has started the year out shaky at best and then is already dealing with a little bit of injury issue. What are your thoughts on Greg Bird for this year?
I feel like Bird had the perfect storm of a great spring, and then right at the end, when everyone's drafting, he went out and smacked two home runs and everybody went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think obviously he was riding a lot of helium into the year. People look at the left-handed bat in Yankee Stadium. I think that they look at the stuff around him and that he flashed some power in 2015. And you can't help but just want to extrapolate numbers and go, oh, 11 home runs in 178 plate appearances translates to, you know, but then you look and you say, okay, 30% strikeout rate, kind of league average walk rate. You know, certainly the guy has some skills. You know, his minor league record looked, you know, decent from a plate discipline perspective, but I don't know. I mean, I don't see a lot of unbelievable stuff. I mean, was he a top 100?
He was.
Was he a top 100 prospect? I mean, it wasn't
was,
like a.
But I mean, he was also coming up at the time in which first base was a lot more well regarded than it is now in the minor leagues. I mean, for me, I was very, you know, and I talked about this when we talked about Greg Bird prior to draft season. Is I said I wanted to see him hit for some power in spring, but that's kind of a lose-lose situation because if he hits for power, then his price goes up.
Right.
And am I willing to pay the price? I wasn't. I mean, I think I have one share of Greg Bird. I got him in my NFBC draft right at the beginning of spring training, and I took a shot because I missed out on all the first basemen that I liked. So far this year, he's at, what, I think 18 plate appearances. He has two walks, one hit, dealing with an ankle injury and the flu. I mean, you're obviously going to hold, but in a shallow format, would you be willing to drop Greg Bird, or you feel like you just got to stick with him?
I I think that he's easy to drop. I mean, for me, a guy with a 66, he just bad contact rate, 66% contact rate. You know, Chris Carter's there for a reason. You know, Matt Holliday can play first base if needed. I mean, it's not like they don't have guys, you know, veteran solid hitters that can go out there and hit home runs. And so, you know, they want to give him a chance, but, you know, as things tighten up and if he's not showing something by, what, June, I mean, do you think he's still going to be starting? I have my doubts. I mean, the expectations in New York are...
I think they're going to give him a run because I don't think they necessarily expect to compete this year. But I could easily see him getting thrown into a platoon. And then he's a guy who probably, you know, in a platoon, you know, at first base with Chris Carter, he's a guy that you're looking at as, does he even hit 20 home runs this year?
Right. Yeah.
And how useful is that? Because it's not like this is a guy who necessarily has a really, you know, nice pure swing. He's not going to hit for, you know, huge averages. I mean, he's probably like a 250 to 260 hitter.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 265, 270 if he gets a little luck in the BABIP department. But I just don't see where the upside is for a first baseman in this day and age of power to be holding on to, especially when there's other guys kind of in the area. I mean, right now, I think you got to hold, you paid the price and the freight, unless you had a really early draft. So you hold and hope for the best. But I mean, he's maybe one of those guys you look to sell if he gets hot at some point.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, it's so hard to base anything off of 150 at bats from 2015 and say, this is who this guy is. I mean, it's easier to dream on what he could be, but he's still young. He really hasn't been proven at the major league level yet. So I think you're really buying into more what you want him to be rather than what he is presently. So, I mean, obviously the park helps, but you know, with injuries starting to creep in thus far, we just don't have enough data yet. So hold and see what happens.
I mean, the nice thing is he does walk a decent amount. He should pull a, you know, 10 plus percent walk rate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least in OBP formats, he has, you know, a chance of helping out a little bit more there. And, you know, considering the Yankees lineup, I don't think there's a reason why you wouldn't hit in the middle of the lineup when he's in.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out with Sanchez just going on the DL,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bird hurt, you know, so how is that? I mean, obviously it'd have been better if them to have some more reps together. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, yes, he walks. The contact issues scare me, but we'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll know more. I believe what the Yankees were off today. So
yeah.
We'll know more tomorrow if he's back in the lineup. So let's move on and talk about Sam Dyson, who has struggled early on this season. You're a Rangers guy. How long can Sam Dyson hold on to the role, and who is the next in line?
Yeah, I mean, Sam Dyson reminds me of, you know, the guy they had the year before who he took over for, Sean Tolleson, who, you know, didn't really profile as a typical, you know, late inning guy. You know, he was obviously a great setup guy and kind of forced into the role because there really wasn't anyone else there to step up at that point. You know, had himself a decent year, not a great year. I mean, 7K per nine, you know, 3 walks per nine, but he has a great ground ball percentage. So that's kind of where his bread and butter is. But, you know, I looked from closers that had at least 30 saves or more last year, only Jeanmar Gomez and Ryan Madsen had worse K per nines. And we already know one of those guys isn't a closer. Madsen really is kind of a closer by committee right now guy. You know, and his profile is kind of a Brad Ziegler kind of guy with, you know, that allows more home runs. So I just don't, I mean, Dyson had a great run, but for me, he's the guy that you want in the seventh, eighth inning to get some of those hard hitters to ground out. I just don't see him as kind of the prototypical guy. It wouldn't surprise me if he keeps roll, but it wouldn't surprise me if he loses it. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of faith in Dyson either. I actually just sold, I think, one of my two shares in a Dynasty League this morning and picked up some prospects in exchange for him and Josh Bell. I think I would – I mean, it's really hard because, I mean, he hasn't looked great this year, so I mean, he's got a 36 ERA.
Yeah.
Not yeah, 360, I mean, a 36 ERA right now. Right. And I mean, his FIP and ex-FIP kind of back most of that up. So it's not like, and it's only been three outings, two innings. But he's taken two losses in both of those, or in two of those. So, I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, I think this is the beginning of the end for him. You know, so far, Jeff Banister has kind of said that he's not going to make a switch very quickly. But, and I know a lot of people are on the Matt Bush bandwagon, and I've been one of them. You know, I wrote an article on Matt Bush prior to last season, right at the beginning of last season, talking about him from social issues and kind of personal perspective. But I think Jeremy Jeffries would be the guy, at least initially. You know, he's got a little bit of closing experience. I don't know if they want to throw that kind of pressure at Matt Bush at this point in his life. So I think Jeffers is probably the guy that would get the first crack. And so if I'm a Sam Dyson owner, I'm handcuffing him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a wise move. Certainly on the handcuff, I think Jeffers is probably the guy. I mean, I know everyone likes the live arm in the pen. But, you know, Jeffries has got some experience. He had 27 saves last year. You know, he profiles pretty similarly to Dyson. I mean, he's got a little bit of velocity, but he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. But he doesn't have a lot of control issues either. I don't know. I mean, he's another 60% ground ball guy last year. So I think he could get a shot. That being said, I don't think it's a ringing endorsement. I mean, you're basically replacing Dyson with Dyson. So, you know, I don't know what you do there. I mean, it's nice to have those options. Another guy that I don't know if you read about this guy, Keone Kela.
Kela?
Kela, yeah. So,
yeah, I just don't know.
I mean, the guy...
Well, it's not really technically off the field because it happened on the field. You know, there was some sort of issue in a spring training B game in which he acted so inappropriately that they left him off the opening day roster.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not the first, it's not the first offense. That evidently, some of that stuff's been building up. So, you know, he's a guy that obviously doesn't have a clear playing time to even get on the roster yet. But he's another live arm that's. You know, should be in the bullpen. Should he, you know, if he can clean up his attitude, who's another guy that has some great stuff. And so there's options there, which anytime you have guys that can step in, it just makes me more wary that Dyson can hold on to the job. So,
Wouldn't be surprised either if Dyson continues to struggle, the Rangers, you know, the Rangers still have some pieces in their minor league system that could easily go out and get, you know, a closing piece, you know, maybe they make a move for Quintana and Robinson, or something like that later on in the season, if Dyson can kind of limp through the next couple months. You know, the thing that worries me about Dyson is he's currently running, his fastball is running about a mile an hour, slower than it did last year. And that's with, you know, I mean, if you go and listen to Sleeper and Bust a couple episodes ago, Eno Saris talks in pretty great depth that I can't even, I'm not even going to try to repeat about how they've switched over to new equipment in terms of measuring speeds and movement of pitches this year.
Right.
And so everything is running almost a full mile per hour, you know, about, you know, 0.6 to a full mile an hour faster or hotter than it was last year, and he's got a tick missing off of his fastball, which means it's probably closer to two ticks. That is concerning to me with Sam Dyson. So I would be looking to sell if I can, you know, even if it's something you know, for what we would consider a lesser closer.
Sure. No, I would too. I mean, Arlington doesn't do any favors. And strangely enough, for a guy that has almost a 65% ground ball rate, when he gets it up, the batters pummel him. I mean, he's got a crazy home run to fly ball rate that's just above league average. And you just wouldn't think that for a guy that gets so many ground balls. But to your point about velocity, I mean, Jeffries is down a tick and a half on his own fastball. So that doesn't bode well as a unit right now for Texas. And I think you're kind of seeing some of the fruit of that so far this year.
Yeah. Let's move on. Talk about another guy. Here's a guy that's not struggling. That's Michael Wacha. Matt Thompson made me throw him on the show notes and doesn't show up. Wacha was a guy that was kind of everybody's breakout pick not too long ago. Really stumbled to the point where he was taken out of the rotation. The only reason he makes it into the rotation this year is because Reyes, you know, obviously has to get the Tommy John surgery. He's the next man up. First start, very encouraging. What are your thoughts on Michael Wacha for this year?
Yeah, I love him. I tried to pick him up everywhere I could. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, guys that coming off injury, you know, that, you know, they have kind of a clean bill of health, no lingering issues. You know, the skills were there. He was a $15 pitcher in 2015, you know, low 3 ERA, threw 181 innings, gave you 150 strikeouts. You know, his control is not perfect, but you know, what I'm looking for in my starting pitching is kind of the trifecta. Give me, you know, over 7 to 8 K per nine, give me under 3 walks per nine, give me somewhere around a 50% ground ball rate. And that's, you know, a couple tweaks and he's right there. And, you know, you'd like to see the ground balls go up a little bit, but right now he's at, well, not right now because let's see, what's his career? His career 45%, but that's crept up since 2014. It's gone from 42 to 46, 47 to 50 so far this year. So he's trending in the right direction. His velocity's up to career highs, which is a good sign. So, you know, he's in the right organization. He's in the right park. I think the Cards defense is going to be better than it was last year. So I like Wacha.
I like Michael Wacha too. I think he's pretty affordable still in terms of where he's at. I think let me look up his ownership percentage real quick because I'm pretty sure he's out there in a number of leagues. Even after the typical Sunday deadline, he's only owned in just less than 60% of ESPN leagues. And I think this is, you know, guy who obviously health is an issue, and health has been kind of one of the big issues for him over the course of his career. But if you can give him health, if he can stay healthy, then I think he is a guy who should be a top 30 to 40 starter. He's got the park, he's got the team behind him. I think he is a guy that could reemerge as a pretty dependable piece in rotation. And like I said, especially in shallower 10, 12 team formats, he's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the guy won 17 games 2 years ago. So, I mean, you're drafting him at the back end of your rotation, and he's got the potential to be a number two if everything goes well. I mean, that's crazy great value. So, and what is he? He's 26 years old. So
yeah, I know, you know, he's still really young.
Yeah. So I like, there's no reason why you shouldn't even try to go get him, honestly. I would before a couple more starts and that window closes. So he would be a guy I don't know how buying high is on him because, you know, I don't think his value is
one start. And,
right. But I would say, you know, if you've got a guy that's gone out, you know, you're down a David Price or you're down a, you know, somebody, he would be a guy that you could get relatively inexpensively. And, I think he could give you a good run.
Yeah. Let's move on to a guy who's struggling, and that's Byron Buxton. Now, yeah, he got some inflation because of the really big end of the season last year. People really thought this was, you know, the start of a breakout for the former number one prospect in all of baseball. I mean, he finished last year with 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases, but did a lot of that damage late. So far, he has 27 26 at bats and a total of 2 hits, 1 walk, no home runs, no stolen base attempts. Obviously, if you're not getting on base, it's kind of hard to attempt a stolen base. So,
right.
So what are your thoughts on Buxton? Is it time to cut bait, or do you have to hold?
Oh man, I probably to get Buxton this year, you had to lay down some dollars for him.
Yeah,
so
I would say he was a top 150 pick in NFBC.
Yeah, so you can't drop him. You're certainly not dropping him on April 10th. I talked to my guy that you probably know, Brandon Warren.
Mm-hmm.
He's on Twitter. He's a big Twins guy. He knows that organization pretty well. He's
great,
like, look,
follow. He's very, yeah, very great follow.
Great follow. I can't remember his handle off the top of my head, but Brandon Warren. He said, look, just hold. I mean, he's talented, but he's streaky. Nothing's really changed in his profile. He thinks it's going to click for him eventually, you know, whatever that means. So I think you're in a tough spot if you're in a redraft league, because obviously you believed enough to draft him. So you're going to have to run with it and give him more than, you know, 26 at bats. You're going to have to probably wait until the midway point to see if he can, you know, improve. But I think part of it's just the organization's handling of him. You know, you don't throw a 23-year-old because he has a great spring and a good September and throw him into the third spot in the lineup and just kind of expect him to go. Like, now he's down where he should be. Hopefully that takes some pressure off of him, because he's just he's going to be a great player, but it may not be this year. And
I don't know if he will be a great player. I think he's always going to be a major leaguer because the defense is so superb.
Yes.
But, I mean, I hate to write off a 23-year-old, but I don't think he's ever going to be the guy we thought he would be. You know, if you think this guy is going to turn into a perennial all-star, I think you're sorely mistaken, and I think I would sell low on him. I mean, I think the speed is something that could always kind of be there, but if he doesn't get on base, he's not going to be able to use that speed. He doesn't have Billy Hamilton type speed, so
right.
It's not like he can overcome a you know, crappy on base. You know, like I said, the defense is going to keep him playing and keep him up.
Yep.
But I mean, this is a guy who's currently hitting eighth in one of the worst lineups in baseball. He's hitting in between Eddie Rosario and Robbie Grossman. Not to mention it's one of the worst lineups in baseball. It's one of the most poorly run organizations in all of baseball. I mean, look at what they're doing to Byung-ho Park and Kenny Vargas, probably two of their most potent bats outside of Miguel Sano, and they're leaving them in the minor leagues because they want to make sure they can carry certain, you know, crappy pitchers and Rule 5 picks. You know, I mean, to me, it's a really poorly run organization. It's not a good situation. I mean, I don't have any shares of Byron Buxton because I wasn't a believer coming into the season. But I don't see why there isn't any reason to drop him or attempt to trade him to some person who may believe in a breakout.
Yeah, I mean, if you can trade him, you know, depending on your depth in the outfield, and it does, it depends on your, you know, risk averseness, you know, but, you know, 2015 in Double A, he was getting to where he needed to be. But, you know, then again, he was a 21-year-old in Double A 2 years ago. So at least he's up and he's getting every day at bats. I can't say the same for Joey Gallo and Yerkson Profar in the organization that I follow. So I think part of it is just, he has been poorly developed. He was probably pushed too hard, too fast, and now you're seeing the fruit of that.
He's swinging at over 45% of pitches outside of the zone.
Yeah, I mean
he's not picking things up well, and that's a real problem for a guy who needs to get on base.
Yeah, no, I agreed, and I don't think you're going to get anything back. I actually had someone contact me about him that would trade me Miguel Sano, but he wanted
done
John Lester with it. He wanted
no.
somebody else with it. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. So,
I mean, you know, it's hard because we live in a day and age in which everybody tries to buy, you know, buy low, sell high.
Yeah.
But, you know, people really, I think there's a time and there's certain times in which it's okay to, you know, attempt to sell low. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of times we want to wait for, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to wait for a 2-week stretch in which this guy is hot. Well, that one, that 2-week stretch may never come. And two, is someone really going to buy in on a 2-week stretch if the first month of it was awful?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the problem is that somebody believed enough in the draft to go after this guy when, mm-hmm. you know, most people were like out completely, like, no way. There's too many good players available with track records. And so, yeah, it's going to be a tough, sell in a redraft league right now.
Let's move on real quick to Yasiel Puig running.
Yep.
Even with just two of us, we're running a little bit
long. I know.
I know you need to get to bed. I need to get to bed. And we still have a whole nother section of stuff to cover real quick.
Let's do it.
Let's move on to Yasiel Puig. Starting off the season absolutely on fire. A guy that I've been buying in on, and I actually had to defend in our staff chat on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. I know none of you get to see that, but some people really going after him. 3 home runs so far this season, hitting with a .292, .414, .750 triple slash 7 games into the season. Is this the beginning of the Yasiel Puig breakout we thought we would see after 2013?
Yeah, I mean, we never doubted this guy's, you know, on the field ability. It was always a matter of attitude and did he really want to, you know, tap into what we knew he could do. And interesting, I don't know if you saw the tweet come out, maybe it was a couple days ago. It was a quote from Puig that said, basically, if I don't hit the baseball, I don't have any money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was this really bottom line statement, like a young guy getting it finally, like, look, either I do my job and get paid for it, or I'm going to be out of the league. It was kind of like my take on that. And it's like, if he's getting that, then I'm in, you know, despite the, you know, he's still got ground ball issues. I don't like his batted ball profile. He hits a lot of ground ball still. But that being said, 4-5 strikeout to walk ratio, his BABIP is still super duper low. So, I mean, if we're just kind of opening the can on this guy, I mean, he could have an amazing season.
Yeah, I mean, I was big on him this year coming into the season. I'm still big on him. He made some mechanical adjustments to his swing to try to get away from that batted ball profile that you spoke of. I think
right.
It's starting to pay dividends early on. And I think he's a guy that could hit for more power than we've seen in the past. I mean, like you said, we've never doubted the skills. The skills right. have always been there. I mean, he's a flashy player who has, you know, good speed, good hit tool, a cannon in the field. Yep. It was just a matter of whether or not his head was ever going to be screwed on correctly. And you know what? I'll be real honest, and this is one of the things I've said before on this podcast and gotten yelled at for, so feel free to yell at me on Twitter if you want to have an argument. I don't typically block people, so you know, you don't have to worry about that or anything. But if Yasiel Puig was white, we wouldn't be having nearly these many conversations as we do, because you know, he would be a celebrated player. Bryce Harper does a lot of the crap on the field that that Yasiel Puig does in terms of bat flips and showing people up and being a fiery personality. But he's the face of a franchise and the face of the league. Yasiel Puig gets sent down to AAA
yeah.
you know, because of things like that. I think Yasiel Puig has gotten a bum rap. Sure, does he deserve a little bit of it? I can buy that. But has he deserved the full brunt of it? No. This is a talented young player. He's still young. He's only 26 years old, coming into his own. This is a year I think Yasiel Puig hits 25 plus, maybe even 30 home runs, and it really propels the Dodgers to a playoff spot.
Sure, and don't discount the fact that this was kind of the first time where they just gave him a starting job and said, you know, don't worry about looking over your shoulder. You know, here you go. You know, run with it. You know, that does a lot for a guy's confidence, and I think it is. If he can kind of harness all of that energy, you know, people were just going crazy at the WBC about how much they loved Javier Baez and, his, you know, spunk and all of the energy that that some of the other teams were showing. And it's like, then why the double standard with this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he plays with just as much passion, and so let him run. And I agree with you. I think he's going to have a great year.
All right, we're gonna talk about some more guys real quickly here in a moment. But first, yep. I want to mention our sponsor, and that is the Draft app. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for only one night, and they take only minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chance of winning money on Draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on the other sites. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should try by playing on Draft. Download the Draft app now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter our promo code FWFB when you download, and you will get a 100% deposit bonus up to $600. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter our promo code FWFB. And if you haven't played on the Draft app, you need to go try it out. It is a whole lot of fun. It's actually an idea that I had at one point, and they beat me to it. Because, you know, Joe, what's the best part of fantasy baseball?
Well,
it's draft season, right?
It's draft season. Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, it's draft season. We all love draft season. You know, there's two seasons in fantasy baseball. It's draft season and the regular season. And a lot of people come to play for that and then get bored halfway through. On the Draft app, you can draft every night of the week. And it's a ton of fun. Doesn't take very much time. Me and Matt have been going head to head for the last week and a half on it. And he started kicking my butt, and now I'm kicking his butt. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it.
So definitely check it out. All right, we're gonna play a little pick your poison, kind of a would you rather game that Chuck came up with on a previous episode. I'm gonna throw out two guys. You tell me which one and why, and we're gonna move pretty quickly. So we're going to start with some first basemen. Mark Reynolds or Logan Morrison, both starting out hot. Who would you rather have?
Give me Logan Morrison. Yep. I like his age. I like his contact rate. Ultimately, it's the clearer path to playing time, though, because we wouldn't even be talking about Mark Reynolds if Ian Desmond hadn't gotten hurt. So he's already on the mend. I like Reynolds for what he is right now, but I think Logan Morrison could have actually a decent year this year.
I completely agree with you. I think aside from the path of playing time, which is a big deal. I mean, I know Reynolds is playing in Coors, and that's really sexy for, you know, power guys, but he's going to be short end platoon kind of guy. Morrison, you know, finished off the season last year hot. Is starting this year hot, so I mean, maybe there's some carryover. This is a guy that we've never necessarily worried about the skills as much as we've worried about the health. He just has never been able to stay healthy. If I asked you how old Logan Morrison was, how old would you think he is?
I think he's 29.
Wow, nailed it. I would have thought he was older. I would have thought he was mid-30s, because he seems to be around for forever. But in some ways he has. I think this is a year. There's nobody challenging Morrison for playing time at first base more than likely in Tampa Bay. I don't think they're going to bring up Gillespie or Bowers, because why would you start their clock in what is probably going to be a lost season in Tampa Bay? So I'm on the low-mo train too.
It's interesting though. I don't think Tampa Bay's offense is going to be as bad as people think. I like Kevin Kiermaier. I actually like Malik Smith more than most people. You've still got Longoria. Brad Miller is decent. Who do they have? I can't remember who they have.
Matt Duffy.
Oh, Matt Duffy. Tim Beckham, right. So, I mean, I think they've got some players. Steven Souza, if he can ever put together
I don't believe in Alex Cobb. I don't believe in Blake Snell. Jake Odorizzi is what he is at this point in his career. Love Chris Archer. I'm not on the Matt Andrees bandwagon. The question to me becomes, at what point do they bring up, you know, Jacob Feria, Brett Honeywell, who I guess looked amazing in his minor league debut, 12 strikeouts. for AAA somewhere.
yeah.
So, but no, I just don't know if they're going to bring those guys up. I think their offense is a little bit underrated, and it's only going to get better as injured players start to come back, and Duffy, Rasmus, and Ramos. For me, it's a matter of the rotation and, you know, and that bullpen, which outside of Alex Colomé, who could get traded at any point, is pretty shaky.
Yeah, I'm a little bit higher, more bearish on the rotation than you are, I think.
Yeah.
I actually love Alex Cox.
Archer, and Archer looks great at the start of the season.
Yep.
But I don't believe in Alex Cobb coming off of I want to see a full year of Alex Cobb. While the velocity seems okay, the movement isn't the same on his secondary pitches right now, and I think while the first start was encouraging, I think there's going to be some blow-ups here quick. I wasn't on the Alex Cobb bandwagon, but if I've got shares, I'm trying to unload them now.
Nice. Well, we'll see what happens.
Let's go ahead and talk about the next pairing. Jesus Aguilar or Ryan Zimmerman, both guys hot as well.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to take Ryan Zimmerman. He's burned me so many times, I don't even know why I'm saying this. Other than the fact that Aguilar, you know, has no track record. I could see him easily getting demoted in a month or two if he's not hitting. And it says more about what I like around Ryan Zimmerman than anything that I really like in Milwaukee right now. I think they're going to be sellers at the deadline. I think Braun's going to be gone. And if Braun's gone, then who is there other than my favorite name, Jet Bandy? So I like Ryan Zimmerman.
I'm going to go with Ryan Zimmerman too, because I agree. The lineup to me is better. I have, you know, it's not a ton of faith, but I have more faith that this time next month we'll still be talking about Zimmerman and not talking about Jesus Aguilar. He was claimed off. He's a former, you know, decent prospect for the Indians. But at this point, he's almost 27 years old. He's never really done anything in the major league level. I think Aguilar is more of an indictment of Eric Thames.
Yeah.
The fact that they're already platooning them at this point in the season doesn't speak too highly of the restart of Eric Thames's major league career.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
Let's talk about the next pairing, Brandon Finnegan or Kendall Graveman. Kendall Graveman was throwing a no hitter before Twitter jinxed him, and Brandon Finnegan threw a gem in his first start, and then like I said, I guess he wasn't technically roughed up. He only gave up one earned run, but two innings pitched because his pitch count got so high so quickly. Which guy would you rather have?
I went back and forth. I think I'd rather have Graveman. I know he doesn't have the upside of a Brandon Finnegan. You know, you like to see that left-hander throwing gas, great slider. But I just, when I take into account the park that Graveman pitches in, I think he's got a little bit less risk for me. And I think that, you know, the problem is he's kind of Singrani-esque, right? Like, he's gone almost completely sinker. I think he's thrown it like 85% of the time so far this year. So how long can he get by with that? You know, we'll see. If he can keep that ball down, he's in the perfect park for it. So I like Finnegan's upside long term more than Graveman, but for this year, I would rather have Kendall Graveman.
I actually don't mind both in deeper formats. I think I prefer Finnegan because I just think that the stuff is better National League. I would prefer him in a quality start league, obviously, over Wins League, because I don't know how many games the Reds are really going to win this year.
Right.
Though their offense isn't as bad as I think some people make it out to be.
I think they're leading the NL Central at this point in time.
Yeah, there you go.
So we can hand that off to Matt later.
I think you're going to have days like this in which he does not do well, but I think he's going to turn into a set and forget it kind of guy. At the end of the year, you're going to be okay with the numbers you get from him. I mean, even just this year, I mean, you're looking at a guy who has thrown nine innings between two starts, You know, that's not necessarily encouraging, but it comes with a 1 ERA at this point. Obviously not going to keep that up, but I like what I've seen in terms of swing and strike rate so far this year. It looks like the velocity's up a tad, and that includes the hot gun buying into it. He's got all the skills. The question yes. is, will he be able to hold up over the course of games in a season? Because I think that was one of the big red flags for him. But I think he's made some improvements on his secondary pitches, and he's a guy that could rise pretty fast. So I think if he's available, you go out and pick him up over Graveman. But Graveman is in the perfect park for his skill set. You know, he's in the Coliseum. That should help limit some of the damage. As long as he keep the ball down, he's not going to be a guy that necessarily lights up the scoreboard for you. But in deeper formats, he could be a guy that gets some useful innings for you this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from a pure skill standpoint, I don't even think it's close. I don't have a lot of faith that Finnegan puts it together this year.
I think it's definitely a floor ceiling type thing. If you've got some risk in your offense, maybe Kendall Graveman's the guy that is a little bit safer, but his ceiling is a little bit more limited. Whereas if you've got some guys already, you've got a Bumgarner, you got a Kluber, someone like that, really giving you some safety at the top of your rotation, then I think Finnegan's a guy that you shoot the moon with.
For sure. Yep.
All right. Chris Devensky or Archie Bradley, two guys who are middle relief guys, but could be much more. Who'd you rather have?
Yeah, I like Devensky here. I think he was completely underrated last year. I don't think anybody had him on the radar, and I think he ended up returning like $17 of value in a 5x5 format. So this is a guy whose role is clearly defined in Houston. I think he could be a guy at the end of the year that vultures, you know, 10 wins out of your middle relief spot and has unbelievable peripherals, gets you crazy amounts of strikeouts, and I think he's just valuable in and of itself, even if he's not a big saves guy, even if he's not a big holds guy, if you play in a holds league. Bradley is more of a function of what is the organization going to do with him. I think everybody looks at him and says he could be an elite lights out closer. Will they do that this year? I just have great doubts. Now, if they're in a playoff run, you know, later in the year, and they're still throwing out Fernando Rodney, I think that's the closer right now, who's just nobody believes in him. You know, then maybe they make the switch, but I just think they're going to still toy him back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen, and I just don't like that at all. So that's really the reason why Devensky gets the nod for me here.
You know, we talked about Archie Bradley, Matt and I, on last week's prospect podcast. And we both like him as a dark horse for saves towards the end of the year. I'm a little bit more in on that because I don't think the Diamondbacks are necessarily a team that's going to compete in that division. And so I think Rodney will get moved for whatever they can get for him at some point this season. And maybe Bradley then can assume the role. So if you're looking for saves, it's Bradley. But if you're looking for just overall numbers, it's Devensky. The skills are absolutely amazing. Love what I've seen from him over the course of the last, 8-9 months. Right. Like you said, just earned a ton of value, and nobody bought in. I mean, very few people had him on their roster. I mean, to me, it's like I almost wonder why he's wasted in the bullpen, or at least where he's at in the bullpen, because I think he should be starting personally, and especially on a team that is looking for outside help in the rotation. It doesn't make sense to not at least give this kid a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the conventional wisdom, but I think you're seeing an evolution of these middle relief guys who are kind of long men who can go 3 or 4 innings. And who really take the pressure off your entire rotation?
If you're a team that has a solid rotation, then that's great. You know, you love to have a guy like Andrew Miller. If you're Cleveland and your top three are, you know, Kluber, Carrasco,
and Salazar,
right. And then you're running out, you know, Trevor Bauer and whoever, you know, whatever Joe Schmo they run out as their guy in in the fifth spot. But when you're Houston and you're running out the likes of Charlie Morton and Mike Fiers,
yeah,
I think, you know, and I mean, I love Lance McCullers. Keuchel looks, you know, like maybe he's reclaiming a little bit of what he lost last year. And, you know, some people, you know, are big Joe Musgrove fans. But let's be honest, there's two dead spots in that rotation. And yeah, they've been the one of the top names in the Quintana sweepstakes since last year, I mean, for the most part. So, I mean, when you got a guy who could be the answer, and, I mean, their bullpen is still lights out without him. I mean, Tony Sipp has been good. Michael Feliz has great stuff. Will Harris, Luke Gregerson are great setup men. And, you know, Ken Childs is your closer. It's not like if they trade, or sorry, it's not like if they move Divinsky into the rotation, like you're losing a ton of stuff.
Right. No, I think he'll probably make some starts. I think ultimately Astros are going to be in on Quintana still. I know that hasn't happened yet, but I think it's just a matter of time. Because I think the AL West is completely up in the air this year. It's going to be tight all the way through the division, at least the first three spots. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for your argument there. I mean, we'll see what they do. Divinsky was never kind of a prospect or anybody. He was kind of like a, you know, somebody that kind of came on unknown. And so my guess is that they don't want to put any more pressure on him than they need to. And
he may be a guy they don't want to overexpose, or
probably. I mean, I think when he did start, even in the spring, it wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And so obviously, I mean, he's got 14 strikeouts in 8 innings so far this year. I mean,
he's worth picking up as a middle reliever in virtually anything deeper, 12 teams or deeper. I mean, yeah, you know, if you play in a league where middle relief is usable, he's Andrew Miller-esque numbers.
Yes, and particularly for the reasons you cite, like their starters aren't great, which means he's going to win a lot of those games in the fifth, sixth, and seventh innings. So he could still give you 10 to 12 wins as in middle relief, which is just kind of a crazy thing. So,
yep. All right, let's finish out with kind of a deeper league one: Kyle Gibson or Jason Vargas?
Yeah, I read your Fangraphs piece. I'm gonna go with you. I don't know why, because Kyle Gibson is like Ryan Zimmerman to me. It's like, how many times can I get burned? But I mean, if for no other reason that he's 29 years old. I mean, 2015 he did give us a 2.5 WAR year, so he's not that far removed from being somewhat valuable. So, you know, maybe he puts it together finally. I don't think he's going to be the top 50 pitcher that you think he is, but I'll take him over Vargas. I don't get into 86 mile per hour fastballs. So
Vargas looked pretty good in his first start back.
He did, and he looked good last year when he came back.
But I'm not necessarily buying it. Not to mention, I don't know where he's going to end up when the Royals start trading all their pieces away mid-season. Yep. So, I mean, right now, Kauffman is a great spot for Vargas because it hides, you know, the size of the ballpark hides a little bit of the warts. But who knows how many innings you're going to get out of Vargas this year and then where they're going to be towards the end of the season. So I just can't buy in completely. I think he's a good, for now, you know, kind of guy in 20-team leagues or AL only. But for me, I was very encouraged with what I saw in Kyle Gibson in the spring. He made some mechanical changes that seemed to be really paying off. Even his first start, in which he went five innings pitched and gave up three earned runs before being pulled, came with 5 strikeouts, only 2 walks. He looked good, you know. And Danny Santana misplayed a relay that cost him 2 runs. So I think that maybe that would have, had he not done that, we may have been looking at a guy who went 6 and only gave up a run or 2. He's not going to turn into a top 30 starter, but I mean, in AL, I grabbed him in two AL only leagues after the draft. He wasn't taking an AL only tout, even in the reserve. So I mean, this is a guy that's out there in virtually every league, and I think in AL only he or maybe like 20 team mix, he's worth grabbing and seeing if he can hold on to some of the changes he's made.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a good park. I think the defense behind him is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he got 7 ground ball outs his first. I mean, I'm not going to say the Royals are a great lineup anymore. I know there's some pieces there that are still good.
Sure, yeah.
But that being said, I mean, yeah, AL only leagues for sure. You know, he is what he kind of is. And if, you know, if he can give you, you know, if he can give you 170 to 190 innings again this year, and let's say a high 3, maybe around a 4 ERA, I mean, that's not bad. That mm-hmm. that will fill out the back of your rotation. So
exactly. Yep. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Joe, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Definitely. We'll definitely have you on again at some point in the season. But before you go, let people know where you can reach on social media, and then give yourself some plugs.
Yes, I am at Shoeless Joe HQ. Tweet me, follow me. Be happy to talk any kind of baseball, fantasy with you. And I'm writing at baseballhq.com. You can find my column every Sunday, and that is the Market Pulse column for all of your fab and ad drop issues or concerns. Hit me up, let me know.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff over at FanGraphs or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. On FanGraphs right now, I'm writing the daily notes, which is called the Roto write up. I'll be doing that Monday through Thursday, and then my usual Wednesday column will be coming out on its usual time on Wednesdays, which I believe is 2:15 p.m. Eastern. So definitely check all that out. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And if you are if you give us a 5-star review, we may end up either picking it randomly or picking it by our favorite reviews, and that would get you some Friends of Fantasy Benefits or Rec Room gear, just like Garrett and Austin did when he gave us a 5-star review that Matt really liked. And I think next week we'll let Mike pick, or we'll do a random one, and we'll keep giving away gear. So definitely keep those reviews coming, because they really help us out. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Joe and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.